to the Mystery Twins Detective Agency. I'm Liam Smith, and I gave up podcasting to solve mysteries.
I'm Regan Lloyd, and I've taken over the family business begrudgingly, I think.
Yeah, that sounds about right. Today we watched a show called Private Eyes.
With the best theme song in the world.
Yeah, it was catchy. Is that actually a song? Or
I'm pretty sure it's a song by Hall & Oates.
Okay, right.
But I could be wrong about that. It's my educated guess, though.
Okay, it's a Canadian sort of comedy drama show about a Actually, before we get into Private Eyes,
yes.
I want to do a retrospective on our last episode.
Go on.
So in the couple of weeks since we recorded our last episode, because of scheduling issues and internet issues on my end, I've already employed some of the skills that it taught us.
Go on.
So, a few days after we recorded that episode, my mother dropped her phone in the sink. And because we watched the first episode of Elementary, where a man dries out his phone with rice.
He did.
And we looked that up. I could tell her that the white rice she had put it in wasn't the best material that we had available that she could use. So as a result, a few days later, not only was her phone waterlogged, but it also had oats stuck in the power port.
Wow.
Mystery solved.
Well, I mean, that just means that you're well on your way to becoming part of the world's greatest detective agency.
Yeah, and really we can only go up from here.
Yeah.
All right, so today we watched a show called Private Eyes.
Yes.
It's a Canadian comedy drama thing about...
I've read that a lot, that it's a Canadian comedy drama. I did not see any comedy in it, to be honest with you.
I saw things that I thought were meant to be comedy, although I didn't find them very funny.
Well, there you go.
Yeah. It's based on a book called The Code by G.B. Joyce, which I assume is probably the plot of this first episode mostly.
Yeah,
like hockey and The Code and that sort of junk.
Yes. So our central character is a dude with a name that I've forgotten.
His name's Matt Shade.
That's an amazing name.
AKA The Shadow. He used to play hockey professionally in Canada, but now he is down on his luck, sort of. He's trying to be a scout, but it's not going very well.
But he's got one kid who might do well, and if that kid does well, he can get into the scouting game.
Corey's a real promising lead, that Corey is. He also has a dad and a daughter.
Yep.
He also has a wife who I had assumed was dead for most of the episode until maybe about 35 minutes in, someone said something to his daughter like, oh, well, when your mum gets back from her globetrotting adventures, then she can take care of you.
I did exactly the same thing. I just assumed it was a dead mum, so the grandpa lives with them to help out situation.
Or at least divorce.
Yeah.
But no, apparently she's just on a holiday and not extant at all for the purposes of the first episode of the show.
Yeah, so
she's also not in the cast list on the Wikipedia page.
Is she just not in the show, but they just didn't want to have to write her out?
Maybe.
Maybe it's a good way for them to not have to deal with another character, because who wants to see more women on TV, honestly?
Well, let me put this out there. The 10th episode of the show is called Family Jewels, and Jules being the nickname of his daughter Juliet. So maybe that has something to do with her coming back.
Maybe. But maybe it's a good way to, like they did in Elementary, establish that there won't be a will they won't they between.
Oh, it felt very will they won't they to me, though.
Well, that's a good point. That's also why I assumed the mum was dead.
Yeah. So his daughter Jules has macular degeneration, so she's functionally blind. And his dad is just a sort of no-nonsense TV grandpa.
I'm picturing the dad from Frasier, which I know is not right.
That's not right, but it's sort of in the same vein.
Yeah.
And then we also have our other main character, Angie Everett, the private investigator.
Yes.
So as is par for the course in these sort of shows, it seems, you have a sort of eccentric or lovable loser sort of male character solving mysteries, and also a very no-nonsense professional female character solving mysteries. Would you say that's accurate?
Yeah, I think that is very accurate.
Her dad and Shade's dad used to know each other, and her dad was a private eye, and as of last year, he died and she has taken over the family business.
She's also afraid of heights.
Yep.
That's all I've got.
Okay, sure.
I did, just to clarify, I did watch this episode 2 weeks ago.
Wanted to record 2 weeks ago, but then my internet crashed for a good couple of weeks.
Which I can't hold against you because I didn't have internet for 6 weeks.
Yeah.
So there was that, and then I meant to rewatch it, but I went to see Groundhog Day last night and then forgot.
The Bill Murray movie?
The musical.
Oh, cool.
Tim Minchin wrote it.
I didn't know that was a musical.
Yeah, it only opened last week, officially.
Okay. I'm intrigued. Is it good?
Yeah, it's a lot darker than I expected. Like, they actually did a whole number of the suicide montage.
Dang.
It had some very good stage magic. Oh my God.
Did it delve into the fact that it's likely he would have had to have gone through many, many, many more loops than we saw in the movie to have learnt to play the piano that good?
Yeah. Not like to the extent where they didn't make it explicit that it was probably 35 years, but they did like touch on that a bit.
Okay. Before we get into our recap, we have to run down our persons of interest. So we did the characters, but their actors are Jason Priestley as Matt Shade, best known for being in Beverly Hills 90210.
Yes. I was like, what is he from? But I didn't look it up.
I never really watched that program. Is it good?
It's not as good as hit 90s TV show Popular, and that's all I'll say on the matter.
Okay. Well, what is that?
Oh, man. That is a story for another time. I can't get into it now. It'll take up the whole podcast.
All right, sure.
I mentioned it on our first Teams episode, actually. So you should go back and listen to that.
Okay. Go back and listen to our previous podcast. Jason Priestley, also notable for being the character Richard Fitzpatrick in a show called Call Me Fitz that I've never heard of.
It sounds horrible and I want to watch all of it.
He plays a morally bankrupt used car salesman.
There you go.
And he's also responsible for making the Bare Naked Ladies famous.
Really?
Well, according to his Wikipedia page, he's a big fan of them. And in the early to mid-1990s, he went to a lot of their concerts and then directed their music video for The Old Apartment and, quote, used his fame to persuade American stations to air it.
Well, there you go.
Yeah. Lead singer Ed Robertson continues to cite him as being instrumental in their American success.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, so that's a sort of weird footnote on his life, I think.
Yeah.
He also drives race cars as a hobby, which is something you can only do as a famous person, I think.
Yeah, I agree.
That's what Frankie Muniz does now, isn't it?
I have no idea, but I trust you.
I'm pretty sure he retired from acting to become a professional race car driver.
Wow.
Good on him, I guess.
It seems like a lot of work.
Yeah, but if you enjoy it.
Well, yes, that's true.
If you walk away from acting and find that one other thing that gets into your skin, then do it. These are things that happen in this episode.
Yeah, I got your heavy-handed metaphor.
Yeah, but the listener might not. That's because, as far as I could tell, we are the only people who've ever watched this show.
Yeah, it doesn't seem to have any following at all.
No. Couldn't find an AV Club recap, which I like to brush up on before we record.
Me too.
The IMDb page just has the basest of plots and synopses and cast details.
Yeah.
There's that. And our other main character is played by Cindy Sampson, a Canadian film and television actress who I don't really recognise anything she's been in, although she was in 11 episodes of Supernatural as a character named Lisa Braden.
Amazing.
Lisa Braden is a yoga instructor that had the best night of her life with Dean when they met in 1999, while he was on his own since his father and Sam were hunting a banshee. Later on, she hooked up with a scarred guy she met in a biker bar and got pregnant.
Wow, that's quite the character trajectory for 11 episodes.
Quite a life.
All right, so we've got our persons of interest. We've got an overview.
Let's crack open the case file.
Let's do it.
So, we open in a hockey arena. No. We have a cold open first where a man is very angry at Matt Shade for sleeping with his wife.
But then he finds out it's Matt Shade and it's fine, actually.
Because he's a famous hockey guy and I loved your work.
So please, but then, take my wife more.
No, but then he remembers what situation they're in and he goes to hit him with the golf club he has and we cut to credits. But
Private
that also really... really set us on the right path for assuming that he wasn't married.
True.
Although maybe he's not married because he wasn't wearing a wedding ring. And maybe it is just a sort of single parent situation. Even if Jules' mum is globetrotting, perhaps they're still not a couple when she gets back.
That's a good point, which I had not considered. But they really just need to make it more explicit what the dealio is.
I feel like it would have been stronger, assuming she doesn't show up in a future episode, if they just hadn't mentioned her at all.
Yeah, I agree.
All right, so after the credits, we are in a hockey arena. Matt is there. He's bantering with this other lady scout and this other guy who seems like a bit of a jerk as they are watching his boy Corey tear it up on the ice.
Yeah, so Corey's the number one pick for something.
Yeah, it's a training camp that new prospects go to, and he's looking pretty promising to get signed.
And that means he's going to be famous.
Yeah, but some of the other guys are being kind of rude to him. Like, one guy comes over and just sort of dumps on him a bit, and they also put tape on his ice skates. I don't know enough about ice skating to know what that would have done, but I assume it would have tripped him up on the ice or something.
Yeah, I don't know.
It seemed like a very Canadian sort of thing. Like, up until the incident happens about 10 minutes in, I felt like we were watching some sort of hockey drama.
Yeah, me too. And I, I don't think I've ever wished for expository dialogue more than in this show.
Yeah, someone explain these hockey things to me, please.
Yeah, I just need that one person being like, so if they put tape on his skates, does that mean that he'll skate into the third dimension?
What?
I don't... Why, that could be what happens. I don't fucking know, because they didn't tell me.
Right. Yeah, I feel like if... Well, based on the way the dialogue assumed a basic familiarity with the concepts of hockey, and... I sound like such a nerd when I say that. And also, just the sort of the general... With the clip it was going along, I feel like if Corey hadn't had his heart attack in about 5 minutes, this would have spiraled off into being a sports drama show about this sort of down on his luck hockey scout.
And I think there's always going to be the undercurrent of that in the show, to be fair.
True. Although I think he's done with hockey at the end of this episode.
Is he, though? I don't think he is. I think it's going to keep luring him back with its siren song.
You can take the hockey out of the guy, but you can't take the guy out of the hockey.
Exactly.
Wait, other way around. Reverse that.
Yeah. Is it reverse that? I don't know anymore.
Holy shit. I had this Huffington Post Canadian article about Private Eyes open, and the bottom comment, I just scrolled down to the bottom absently while I was talking then, is by the guy who wrote the book this is based on.
Oh my god, tell me more.
He says, I wrote The Code, the novel that the series is based on. The writer here noted that Shade did not have a partner in the first book of the series of mysteries. In fact, his girlfriend, a psychologist, was tantamount to a partner in solving crime character. Much of the book, though, is pretty... I think he's mistyped here. Much of the show, though, is pretty true to the novel. The Toronto-ishness, ex-cop father, divorced from TV personality. Hey, we know that now. Wise daughter. Anyway, I am, as you'd expect, a fan of the series and a very big fan of JP, Amazing and Call Me Fitz, and Cindy Samson.
Wow, that's... Okay. Well, good to know that three people have seen the show, then.
Yeah. Well, four. You, me, the guy that wrote this... Huffington Post Canadian article.
Oh, yes.
And the guy who wrote the book based on
I forgot about the guy who wrote the article being another party.
That could be the same guy under a different name.
Oh my god, plot twist. That's a new mystery we have to solve.
Yes, so Corey gets back out on the ice and he gets a hockey goal and he's feeling... everyone's feeling really good. Everyone's cheering. His mum's there along with the head of the league or whatever. And, Shade feels like he's finally going to be getting his job officially, because he's a bit of a freelancer right now.
Yes, he is.
He gets invited up to the office, or the upper viewing deck, with Shade's mum and the guy who's in charge, and they have a very promising agreement to meet later and discuss Corey and his future with the league. But then, what happens?
Well, then Corey, I think, scores a goal or does something very good. And then just Dunn collapses on the ice.
Yeah, he starts sort of slowly, he sort of skates to a halt and then just hits the deck. And everyone freaks out, a bunch of paramedics run on over. And
then we cut to something.
I really liked the way their defibrillating was portrayed. It seemed very real to me. They sort of kept everyone clear. They put the plastic panels on his chest, and... The electronic voice associated with the machine just felt very real to me. Maybe it was a real unit.
Good job, reality.
Yeah. So then after that, we cut to...
Fuck, I have no idea.
Hospital, I believe.
Okay.
Shade and Corey's mum both go see him in the hospital, and the doctor is like, we need to do a test for any performance enhancing drugs, and his mom's like, no, I know my boy, he wouldn't do that.
This is,
and
like,
the doctor's like, come on, we need to do it anyway.
Yeah, this is straight up every TV medical drama I've ever seen. Dialogue just lifted out of ER and carried through the ages. I've never seen ER, but I am assuming.
Okay, sure. So, Chicago Hope.
Yeah, what was the first medical TV drama? That's a good question for Wikipedia-ing later. So they have to do the tests, and...
And I think it's revealed to us off-screen, in fact, that he does test positive.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yep. So is this where we get the mystery occurring?
Yeah, Shade sort of promises to his mum that he's gonna figure out what happened here.
And that's where he turns into a detective.
Kind of, but first he has to go attend to some personal family business conflicting with his cool mystery-solving lifestyle, because his daughter wants to get into a high-priced college or school.
I think it's a high school, I think.
It was Ellard?
Yeah, I don't know. Because I don't think a college admission would be as easy as just...
going to a meeting.
Also, I think they met with the principal.
Okay, sure. Yeah, so he runs in, he's late, his dad is there, his daughter's there. He's like, sorry. He has, a fairly reasonable excuse for being late, going to the hospital with this kid. But his daughter is understandably annoyed at him.
Yeah. So this is where we find out that she has...
Ellard. It's Ellard. E-L-L-A-R-D.
Where she's got macular degeneration, and she doesn't want to be their token... I can't remember the phrase.
She says she doesn't want to be there to fill a diversity quota.
Yes. But they're like, no, no, you're very smart. We want you for you. Not because you've got macular degeneration.
All right.
And then the dad takes her and she feels out the school name on the thing. And I was like, didn't she?
No, that's at the end of the episode.
Don't worry.
As she's leaving here, a Shade pulls out his chair in front of her to show that she's perfectly capable of getting around, and she stops and is like, stop being an idiot, and walks around it and leaves the room.
Yep. Which I guess was, I didn't see the point, but.
So then we cut to after the tour, and he's just taken a call from the mother. I assume that's when he learned that Corey tested positive, and he's going to figure out what's going on. And he explains that he's going to do that to his dad. And then his daughter comes and yells at him a bit for being late. And it sort of establishes their strained relationship, I guess.
Yeah. So his daughter has travelled around with him a bit on the hockey circuit. So she's sort of friends with all the dudes. And they don't want to tell her that Brendan is in hospital because he doesn't want to upset her.
Yes. Corey.
Oh, who's Brendan? Brendan's a different guy, isn't
Brendan... Yeah, Brendan is a very significant guy that we'll get to in a bit.
Okay.
So, long story short, Shade's dad Shade, says that he's going to call up a private detective. And even though Shade is like, oh no, you don't need to do that. I'll do that myself. I know the industry. And they both... Well, Shade goes to the gym where all the dudes work out to go and shake them down.
Yep. And this is where we meet Brendan.
Yeah.
He's training with a hot female personal trainer.
Yep, they're doing the focus mitts, and he has boxing gloves on, and he's punching them. But Shade walks in and starts shouting at everyone. He shouts at the other suspect of the episode a bit first, and the guy's like, no man, I don't take drugs, I liked Corey.
Like, duh, that means you know he's dead.
Dun, dun.
That's not what happens.
But no, that doesn't really go anywhere in this scene, and then he goes and approaches Brandon, who is sparring with... a mysterious, beautiful woman.
She's a personal trainer, Liam. Don't try and make this into more than it is.
Yes, she's purely professional. She's not deliberately emphasizing sexual characteristics or anything.
So, he yells at Brandon, and then the personal trainer is like, fuck you, I had him.
Basically, every time he talks, the personal trainer is like, hey, go away, I'm working here. Overdue emphasis on the latter.
I did not get that, to be honest.
No.
I was like, who this lady?
Oh, I basically pegged it as soon as she was on camera. That was the private eye.
Well, you are much more clever than me.
I could tell by the way she was holding her mitts that she'd had combat training before. edit that to make it sound like I came up with it quicker.
Absolutely. So basically then they meet and they find out they're both working on the same case.
Oh, Brendan and Matt have a fight, basically, and the lady we now know is Angie blocks the punch that Matt goes to throw at Brendan, and then Brandon is going to be like, huh, a girl had to stop you from fighting. A girl. And then Angie smacks him in the face with the focus mitt.
Yep.
Yeah. So then she reveals that she has been hired by Dad Shade to work the case and they should team up or something.
Yeah. And he's like, no, thank you. I got this. And she's like, well, no, you don't.
Yeah, they go back to her office. It's a mess. Long story short, they identify the two primary suspects are Brandon, the guy from before, and Sam, the other guy from before who Shade briefly yelled at.
Yep.
So they go to some sort of fancy dinner or lunch or something on this, I don't know, outdoor entertaining area.
Yeah, they do. It was like a, you know, like a members only golf club or something.
Yeah, I assume it was part of the scouting camp sort of way they butter up the potentials.
Oh, that's a good point. That makes sense.
So first, they argue a bit with Sam, I think. That doesn't really go anywhere again because he, spoiler alert, he's just a big red herring, so they just throw him into every investigating scene.
Who's Sam?
The one who's, he's the other main suspect.
Oh, the one who's like the second, because Brandon
the
and
dark
Sam.
The dark-haired tall guy.
Brandon and Sam are the second and third ranked ones.
Yeah, pretty much.
Okay, yes, I know where we are.
So then they go and speak to Brandon and his dad, and they talk about how Brandon had been done for doping before, and with the same sort of drugs that were found in Corey's system. Dun-dun.
Yeah, dun-dun indeed.
Seems like a pretty damning piece of evidence.
I would agree with you. And at the end of this conversation was the halfway point where we had to write down our suspects. Mm-hmm. Just FYI.
Oh, I went a bit later in this one because I don't feel like I had enough to go on yet.
Well, me
but
neither.
But I have time-stamped it.
Okay, good.
Because that's the new rule, remember? We do it whenever, but we time-stamp it.
I forgot about that rule, but it's fine. I feel like I had no idea at any point who it was going to be, so I was like, might as well just fucking go here.
So then they actually go and do some proper investigating and shit, where they break into both of their rooms because they're right next door.
Because it's a camp, so of course they are.
Yeah, in the hotel, where first they go into the room of the woman coach who is also kind of suspected, woman scout who is also kind of suspected because she is scouting one of his big rivals.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't find anything there, I don't think. But she starts coming in with some people she's talking business with, so they have to escape out onto the balcony.
And this is where it's revealed that Angie is afraid of heights.
Dun dun. How can she function as a private investigator if she's afraid of heights?
I don't know, man, but then we get some really heartfelt backstory while she's on the balcony terrified for her life.
Oh, we skipped over the bit when they went back to the office where she pulled out the fake breasts she was wearing and put them in Shade's hands.
What? I did not remember that happening.
I just want to circle back to that because I made a point of saying that she was, like, using her womanly assets to butter up Brandon before. So, she had sort of put these sort of plastic sort of bust enhancers down her exercise
top. They're called chicken fillets.
Okay, sure. And then she was like, hold out your hands to Shade. And then he held out his hands and she slapped them both in there. And she called him a shortcut guy.
Yes, she did.
But anyway, now that we've circled back around to that, those two important pieces of characterization.
Yeah.
She's afraid of heights. Heath sort of, they decide to climb over to the next balcony to get into the next room. And she's very hesitant. And he sort of throws her up onto the railing. And she goes halfway over, and they are talking very loud for...
I thought that as well.
Having people, in the room right next door, and also the balcony door open.
Yeah, like, they're not really making an effort to be not caught, which is weird.
Yeah, but no, it's fine. No one hears them. She gets stuck halfway up, and then he pushes her over, and then climbs, and she's like, jackass, or whatever, for making it look easy.
Yep.
And then she picks the door with her private investigating skills, and she says, it looks easy, but it's not... And then she's like, it's really not. It's actually really hard. I'm having a hard time here. And he says, don't worry, it doesn't look easy. Well, you don't make it look easy.
Shade. Matt Shade.
Throwing shade.
We're very funny.
Are we?
Yeah.
Okay. They break into Sam's room and find Corey's gloves that he took off before he collapsed on the ice.
Why would they be in Sam's room and not in the hospital with Corey?
Why did Sam pick them up off the ice? Well, that seems pretty incriminating to me.
I agree.
And this is where I made my guess. 25 minutes in.
Okay. I won't ask who it was. That's a different segment.
We'll get to that. So they, Angie calls up her cop associate to go and get the, chemical analysis done on the gloves to find out if there was any performance enhancing stuff in there, because we've learned that,
you can have
Corey has,
oh yeah,
has a heart defect, which means that if he takes performance enhancing stuff, he'll die.
Yeah. So this is, probably an important point that we just forgot about.
Yeah.
Also, as a side thing that doesn't really go anywhere, Matt's daughter thinks knew about his heart condition and had mentioned it to some other of the guys. So she sort of thinks that it's her fault that someone tried to kill him. But it wasn't her fault. It's not her fault. She's a teenager.
Yeah, and Shade is sort of... He had previously assumed that only his daughter and Matt's mum had known that. Not Matt's mum, Corey's mum.
No, fucking everyone knows, as it turns.
Yeah, seems like it. So anyway, they get this cop guy to run the tests. He makes fun of Matt Shade's name, sounding like a private detective name.
It is, it though.
Yeah. And then what happens?
Fucking who knows, to be honest.
I think they basically just solved the case from here on out. They were like, if it's not Sam... Oh yeah, that's right. It looks like it's Sam. They're gonna, case closed it. And then as Shade's going home, he encounters, all the other dudes who work for hockey, and they're like, Sam is still a very promising asset. You shouldn't press charges. Because if you don't, you can come and work with us and make loads of money.
Yes, and that's when we learn about the code.
Yeah, the code. When he was a boy, going to be a big old hockey star, his dad, Don, made him write the code.
And the code is, family first, love everyone. Don't be a
no
dick.
No yachts.
Yeah, no yachts.
Hustle always wins.
Don't be ostentatious with your wealth. That wasn't on there, but I was...
That's what no yachts means.
It is what no yachts mean. That can be our new Mystery Twins tagline. Mystery Twins.
Mystery Twins.
So you didn't see. No yachts.
No yachts. No yachts too big, no yachts too small.
Hustle forever.
Yes, so his dad and his dad discuss the ethics of the decision he's making, and he's saying, I'm trying to make a grown-up decision here, I want to provide for Jill's future, and his dad is like, I know you are, but I hope Corey pulls through.
Yeah, in the dispensing wisdom way.
Yeah, but then, he goes to go and pay off Angie and give her a check, even though they don't proceed with the investigation, but pay her for the hours she's billed, and she's like, oh, I forgot you're a shortcut guy. Ugh.
The worst. Is there anything worse than a shortcut guy?
But, so then she sort of storms out. She's wearing a kimono and towel over her hair for some reason in this scene.
Obviously, because why wouldn't
you? Yeah, so she storms out of the room in, disappointment in him, and he sort of ruefully goes to leave. And then he pauses for a moment, thinks better of it, and turns around and is about to go back in when she comes out and is like, oh, I just got a text. The residue in the gloves wasn't nearly enough to give him the reaction. So that means it wasn't Sam.
Okay, well then who was it?
And why the hell did Sam still have the gloves then?
That's a fucking good point, actually. Do they address that?
Right. Not that I remember.
No, me neither.
But then if it wasn't Sam, who was it? Moving on.
So then I can't remember how they figure out who it is. I know
who
it was.
Well, if it's not Sam, then it has to be Brandon, doesn't it?
Must be, I guess.
They're driving there. They're assuming it's Brandon driving to the hospital. They're talking about how Corey's medication looks exactly like the pill form of the drug, the performance enhancing drug.
Yeah, do they find a performance enhancing drug on the floor and that's how they...
No, they just Google it, I think.
But they find something on the floor, don't they? And then they Google...
I don't think so.
Okay.
Not that I remember. I could be wrong,
Listen,
though.
I don't know. They do definitely use Google Images in their search, though.
Yeah. They Google the two sort of drugs and they compare them. They're like, they're twins. Someone could have swapped out his medication. But whose? It would have to be someone on the hockey camp because they would be with him all the time. And it built up over a period of several days. And then they're talking about how, as a father, Matt would do anything for his daughter's well-being, which is why he was going to take the deal. But then, who else is a father in this case? The answer is that one guy who is Brandon's father.
Indeed.
Dun dun. So they go and set up some elaborate trap for him in Corey's room, where, I say elaborate, it's possibly the least elaborate a trap could be.
I agree.
They separate him from his son, and then on the pretense that Shade is going to go and ask Brandon some questions about the case. So then Dad immediately goes and starts searching Corey's room, and Shade comes in and is like, hey, I know what you did, but it's okay, I'm cool with it, cut me in on it, and, you know, that's cool. And they go to Shake, but then Shade is like, ha, I knew you did it, and then pins him against a wall as Angie Everett steps out from behind the curtain, and she had been eye-filming the whole thing.
Yeah, suck it.
Yeah. So they cut to Dad being led away with chains. Everyone feels bad for Brandon because his dad's going to go to jail for murder or whatever.
Attempted murder. Because
sure.
Corey didn't actually die.
Yeah, but like his prospects died.
Well, yeah, I don't think you can go to jail for murdering someone's dreams though. Otherwise, I would be locking up so many people.
Dang. Wait, is that laughter or crying?
That's laughter.
Okay. Shade has a touching moment with hospitalized Corey where he is like, you're going to have to turn away from hockey. The doctors think your heart can't take the strain anymore. And I also need to turn away from hockey now. And I have found something that gives me the same thrill that hockey once did. Maybe one day you will too. That thing that I do now is private investigating.
Private as...
Yeah.
He's a detective.
That's then we sort of have a few brief scenes where we wrap up the rest of the stuff that happens, like Jules gets into Ellard and she's very happy. We find out that her mum exists.
Yep.
He sells his championship ring to pay her enrollment costs and also buy her sort of braille neck ornament thing with the code on it.
Which is fucking clunky. Like, because there's
it looks
like
dog tags.
I mean, I like those types of braille necklaces. Mm-hmm. I bought one for my boyfriend. So... Oh,
does it say no yachts?
It fucking... I wish. It does not. But there's, like, one of them is fine, but having, like, seven all with quite long phrases written on them just seems a bit cumbersome to wear, to be honest.
Yeah, that's fair.
But yeah, no, now I definitely want one that says no yachts.
And then finally, we learn that he's trying to approach Angie Everett to be private investigator partners because earlier in the episode, she tried to serve this corrupt politician his court appearance papers or whatever they are, you know, that people serve you.
Yeah, I guess that's why she was serving him.
Fucking
sweet justice is what she was serving him.
Yeah, right? All right. And she's been trying to do it for ages, but he's hired security specifically to stop her from doing that. But he uses his clout as a famous hockey guy to distract him, and she's in disguise as a valet. So she's like, oh, you should get both of our autographs. And do you have a piece of paper on you that we could both sign? Sure, here it is. He signs it, and then it's like, good work, partner. You just got served.
Boom.
And then she walks away and is like, we're not partners. He's like, we could be partners. I'm a great team player. Blah, 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 blah. Private eyes.
Thus cementing the fact that we will see them solve more mysteries together.
Well, will we?
Well, I don't know, Liam. Do you think it's a
cold
case? We'll
get to that in a bit. Hang on. First. Mystery envelope time.
All right. Let me open the mystery envelope.
Can you hear that? That's me flapping paper.
I thought it was you typing.
Nope. All right. So... do you want to go first or shall I?
Let me find my mystery envelope.
It's buried under 2 weeks of nonsense that's accumulated in your room.
It is, yeah.
The real mystery is, where did your envelope go?
Found it.
Okay.
19 minutes and 4 seconds, a kid who was not even in the running and wasn't top 3 because he's jealous.
Dang, that's a good guess.
What was yours?
25 minutes, just after they found the gloves in Sam's room. I figured that it was way too simple a case for that just to be it.
Mm-hmm.
So I figured there had to be some sort of third act twist, and I figured I'd take a leaf out of first episode of Elementary's book and guess Corey's mum.
Oh, plot twist.
Yeah, but no.
No, it wasn't. Well...
We need to get into a show... like past pilot episodes, because they always have really simple cases, and that's throwing me.
They do. Well, what do you think, Liam? Is this case heating up?
Oh, I think this case is pretty cold.
All right. Well.
What about you? Your thoughts?
No, I think it's pretty cold. But also, I like that we're the only people in the world that are watching it.
Yeah. This show is not brilliant, in my opinion, to be honest.
I mean, a lot of the TV I watch isn't brilliant, so I'm not going to use that as a derogatory thing. But it's not compelling, I don't think.
But I can't put my finger on it, but there was something about the dialogue that just felt like it just assumed that we knew what they were going for the whole time, with the quipping and...
I agree.
Where it's like, oh, this is the scene where they establish that they have different philosophies about life, and then they make fun of each other a bit. Everyone understands what that means, so we don't actually need to write the dialogue without any actual effort in it.
Yeah, I think it maybe...
That's cruel. The way of putting that is cruel to the writers, but it felt like it was very much going through the motions in a lot of those things.
Yeah, like just relying on the fact that everyone knows the tropes of a buddy cop pilot. Which yeah. We do. That's our jam.
Yeah. So, no thank you. Maybe some other time when we've exhausted the plethora of other mystery shows we have available.
Yeah, all right.
All right. Now, do we want to solve a mystery this week?
We absolutely do.
Okay. Mystery Twins Detective Agency is open for cases. No case too big, no case too small. Submit your cases and we'll solve them.
Absolutely.
So, I think you had bookmarked our first case as what happened to your spare keys?
Yes. So, I live in a house with 6 people in total. We have one spare key. It goes missing for weeks and weeks at a time. Everyone claims they don't know where it is. And then sometimes it just shows up, but no one knows how it got there.
Okay, I have a theory.
Go on.
Have you ever seen the movie The Boy, 2016?
No.
Good, it's bad.
Okay.
But that's a movie that you think is a movie about a haunted doll that is treated like a kid and gets angry when it isn't. But the twist in that is that it's not a haunted doll and there's a dude living in the walls.
Holy shit.
Who is like moves it around and stuff. So my theory is you have a secret housemate who lives in the walls or the basement or the attic and needs that key every now and then when they go out.
Fucking that checks out, Liam. That's, yeah, that must be it.
Well, I'm sure you don't want to look into that any further.
Absolutely
because if you prove
not.
It's true, you'll be terrified.
Exactly.
So let's just quietly file that one away and...
stamp that case closed.
Yeah, if you have any case you'd like us to solve...
we don't have any social media set
up
yet.
We'll figure that out.
You can tweet at us at our respective tweeters. Mine is Regan E. Lloyd, and yours is Liam S. Smith.
That's right, and we'll probably establish a Gmail and a Twitter account for the show before we launch proper.
We absolutely will do that.
And next week, because we won't have launched then either, our case will be who is the Zodiac Killer?
So
to give you a sort of spectrum of the sort of cases we're willing to work on.
Tune in for that.
Yeah.
All right. Until next time.
In the meantime, yeah.
No yachts.
No yachts. Hustle always wins.